The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Here with Joshua, Q.
Formerly the Q.
I'm here with Brian the Bear.
Hello.
I'm here with, well, Oral.
Hi, everybody.
And then I'm here with Taylor Frost.
Ooh.
He works with us at A Comic Shop in the Geekies. Say hello, Taylor.
Hello.
He's allegedly straight.
Not by the end of this podcast.
I'm hoping not. Okay, so now today's microsode is about Superman. And it's basically, I'm very upset with the fact that everybody always shits on Superman. So I wanted an opportunity for everybody to discuss what they like and what they don't like as far as the movies, the cartoons, the comics, what have you, because everybody has their opinion about him. For me, he's 6'4", has black hair, blue eyes, and 225 pounds of pure muscle. I'm in for this. So that's my point
Taylor,
of view.
You weigh
now what? Don't look at me that way. It's like, you know, he's hot and sexy.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, honey.
What I'd like to start, what we're going to start about is, first I'd like to read something that I wrote up about Superman, that Superman is a universal icon. He means different things to different people. People say he's unrelatable. I'm sorry, what I see is an alien, an immigrant looking for acceptance, a country boy trying to do the right thing. A man with all his powers could rule over us. Instead, he stands up for us. Amen. And that's my feel of Superman.
You wrote that?
I wrote that.
Wow, put that on a poster.
Very well said.
Me. I love him. I can't help it. He's just I'm very passionate when it comes to Superman. So now we're going to start off talking about the comics. And Brian put in some of the... Oh, he's reading the old stuff. So I'm going to have Brian talk about the old Superman.
Yes. So I've been very interested in the history of Superman, of course, because it's the 75th anniversary. That's why we're doing this. And I decided I need to go back to the start. And what really got me interested originally was Grant Morrison's, of course, as we all know, I'm obsessed, Action Comics as part of the New 52. He said he wanted to go back to the Golden Age to draw inspiration for his take in Action Comics. And if you read Action Comics, it gets a little weird, but the Superman at the start is very man of the people. He is a lot more, I wouldn't say he's mean, but he's definitely a lot less stoic than the traditional Man of Steel that we're all used to, I think, over the last 20 years. So one of the things that I went back when I read the very first issue by Siegel and Schuster from Action Comics number one is Superman is kind of, and this is not my quote, I think somebody else said this, he's like a bully of bullies. He really kind of does some mean-spirited things to bad guys. Now, that sounds weird, right? But he is like, torturing, sort of, like, scaring them, like, emotional torture, you know? Like
he holds them upside down.
Yeah.
Right? And I think, like, wasn't a woman being beaten by her boyfriend or husband, and he steps in and stops that?
Exactly. So he is definitely the good guy that we all know in the sense that he will not tolerate innocent life being, you know, or threatened or abused or what have you. But he's also very big about standing up to politicians and lobbyists. One of the very first stories, he stands up to a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. It's like, what?
Oh, my God.
Another thing that's interesting about Golden Age Superman is he does not have all the backstory really fleshed out yet. So there's no kryptonite. That was introduced in the radio plays they did. There's no Lex Luthor. There's really no named Planet. I think they may name his planet, but that's about it. And in fact, originally, what they do say is he's from a race of similar type people. So it's not that he's the exception, as in the new movie we'll talk about. He is just one of the regular people, but he was sent to our planet.
The ordinary made extraordinary.
Exactly. And his outfit is very different. I encourage you all to Google this because it's fascinating. His outfit is, it's got the blue and the red.
Right.
The red boots eventually come along and the red cape. But his symbol on his chest does not quite look like something you would recognize as the Superman symbol. Even the Golden Age kind of like more classic sort of looking one, it doesn't even look like that.
But it's still the S in there.
It's the S, but it's just kind of a little more plain and sort of ugly, actually. The Clark Kent depiction is also kind of fascinating because he does play at first Clark Kent sort of as this pastiche or this kind of parody of what he thinks of humanity. Again, these are analyses I've read, but you can see it coming through where it's very much a put on. It's very much a show, which has been pretty consistent, you know, with future renditions. Also, Lois is a bitch. And I don't mean bitch in the I'm an empowered woman.
Right.
She is really bitchy. And it definitely, even early on, they set this whole love triangle up where Clark is definitely trying to woo her and date her and is interested in her. But she just doesn't have time for Clark because she thinks he's spineless. And he actually, at one point, these gangsters want to, like, dance with her. And Clark won't stand up for her. And she gets pissed off and leaves.
Well, why wouldn't you? Like, that's the thing that I've never understood, why people dislike the whole Clark and Lois in the beginning story, because that's the role he's playing. He's supposed to be a dork. He's spineless wimp because he can't stand up to everybody, because when he straightens out his back and takes off his glasses,
he's Superman.
So it's kind of funny. And then so then of course Lois, you know, falls for Superman, but as you'll see played out more in Silver Age, but also in the beginning, Clark Superman kind of likes fucking with her. Which is kind of hilarious.
What do you mean?
Like,
I mean, wouldn't you if she walked out on a club?
No. Like, what I mean to say is, like, Superman, as much as Clark wants to be with Lois,
right.
Superman actually enjoys being aloof from her. And there's something about that interplay. Like, in one scene in the first couple issues of Action Comics, he, like, goes into a room after he's witnessed this reaction to Superman. I think like, Clark asks Lois, you know, oh, are you with someone? And she's just like, oh, well, it wouldn't be you, and oh, but this Superman, oh, I love him, you know, just go, you know, gushing. So he actually walks away into, like, a room, and he starts laughing. Like, he's enjoying this to no end, and like I said, more in the Silver Age, they do a lot of things to really mess with Lois as a character. In fact, that's one of the conceited of the Silver Age issues, is Superman doing something you would never expect to see Superman do. And this is where you get Super Dickory from, the whole web series where they basically are showing all these things Superman did in the comics. But he's doing it because either he's mind controlled or there's some other thing he's trying to accomplish, or he's in some cases trying to teach them a lesson. So you get this kind of weird sort of, I don't even know how to, not perverted, but perverse sort of sense of humor that Superman has.
Right.
With his moral friends. But anyway, Golden Age Superman's fascinating. And I definitely see the through line from the beginning to even what Morrison and the new 52 is doing. Superman is a little bit more playful, sort of vindictive of bad guys.
In the first first issue of Action, he's holding the guy upside down off of the building.
So. And he's a slumlord. So he really is a big fan of the people. In fact, one of the things he does in the early issues, way back in the late 30s, early 40s, he actually goes through and destroys a bunch of slums because he finds out that if he destroys them, then the city will have to come in and rebuild them as nicer residents. So he actually goes in and destroys parts of the city. And the mayor,
awesome.
The mayor kind of reacts too. He's like, oh, well, this is terrible, terrible. But, oh, actually, it's good because we get to rebuild them and make it look nicer. And so it's just hilarious seeing this history. The other thing that really blew my mind is, you know, we're so used to in pop culture having at least one of the Kents alive, if not both.
Right.
No, in the original rendition, they are long dead.
And they don't even show them at all in the original, do they?
No, well, like, I think you see panels of them. Actually, you do see them going. So they actually put Superman up originally for adoption, like in an orphanage.
Yeah.
And then they change their mind and go back later and get him.
And then, like, doctors try to give him a needle, and it broke.
So there's, like, panels that depict all that. But, yeah, no, they're not alive. And that explains, at least, I think, why back now with the New 52, again, they're trying to go back to that idea.
Right.
So, anyway.
Well, that's pretty good. That's cool, though. Because I remember reading that a long time ago. I had this big book about all that Superman stuff. But now
that we had just entered Vietnam. Huh? I'm sorry, Korea.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you. But then in the Silver Age, it's pretty much kind of like when I started, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
Silver Age was terrible.
Which is funny because some people love it.
Okay, I know. Explain what Silver Age is to me. It was
good versus evil. Superman always won. No matter what happened, Superman always won. It was quirky. You know, there was really no depth to it. What they did, like what Brian was just talking about, there was some depth to Superman. Then there was just these one-shot wonders. You know, it's just like each issue had a beginning, middle, and end.
Well, I feel like Silver Age was one of the, like, reasons that people have that stereotypical image of Superman now.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That's where people make fun of him all the time about, like, you know, even in the, even writers will say, call him a Boy Scout. Like, and, like, that's why they hate Superman is because he's just so boring and one-sided. And that's exactly where it comes from.
He became very much from the spunky uncle of your, you know, whatever, to the father figure. And so he literally gave lessons and taught his friends, you know, Lois, you know, the people at the Daily Planet, Jimmy, oh my God, so many things to Jimmy. He taught them lessons, and he would humiliate them to teach them lessons.
Right.
So the Silver Age is hilarious because, and again, I'm getting a lot of this from this book, The Unauthorized Biography of Superman, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Who wrote that?
Glenn Weldon.
Ooh. Glenn Weldon.
Calm down. Where
do we know him from?
I don't know. You listen to his podcast.
Yeah. He is on Pop Culture Happy Hour on NPR.
Yes. So we'll have more to say.
And he writes about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Which is kind of a neat little job. But we'll talk about him in a little bit.
Okay.
But we will come back to that.
So excited.
But so the Silver Age stuff is very sitcom.
Yes. Exactly.
I had never put the two and two together. A sitcom structure is you start out with this kind of zany, crazy situation, and the whole story is how do I get back to the characters that I really know? You know, like what explains this kind of weird behavior? And that's what the Silver Age was. They were one and dones, or done and ones, however you want to say it, and they were just zany Superman doing crazy shit, and then, oh, this is why.
Which you got to think where it's coming from. We had Batman, Adam West on mm-hmm. TV. That was the time period.
So it's like the 60s into early 70s, but mainly 60s were the proper Silver Age. And you had a lot of writers really interested in catching new readers. So a lot of this was actually driven by, I forgot which writers they were, but they would actually ask kids, like, what do you want to see Superman do? And so it became kind of an arms race where Superman did more and more crazy things to the point where he's punching planets.
Yeah, he got more and more powerful.
Yep.
And just, like right around the Crisis time, Crisis on Infinite Earth, where he was moving planets to keep the whole universe aligned. It was like, whoa.
So really Silver Age is a lot of that. And it's really, again, nicely paid tribute to in Morrison's All-Star Superman, which we'll talk about in a bit. But really, kind of Bronze Age Superman kind of was a little more of an extension of that, right? Up until the Crisis.
Up until Crisis. Yeah, it's still like they started going a little bit more in depth with him. I remember including a Superboy that turned out to be Superboy Prime.
Yeah.
You know, in future. But, I mean, you know, all this stuff they really tried to develop more and more with him. But it was still such a stretch because they couldn't lose the Boy Scout.
Yep.
You know, and they kept him at such a power level until Crisis on Infinite Earth.
And the thing with Crisis right now, again, I read comics a bit after Crisis came out originally, but
Whoa. Explain Crisis.
Crisis on Infinite Earth is the exact opposite what Geoff Johns did. Geoff Johns took one universe and blew it out to 52. Back in my day, in the beginning, they had 52 and they made one. And that was the one Earth that they had up until Geoff Johns' run, until he decided to blow it all out. Again, it was him and Grant Morrison, right? Or was it just Grant? Was that Grant Morrison?
No, Infinite Crisis. You talking Infinite Crisis later?
Crisis on Infinite Earth was when the 52 and they made one.
That was Marv Wolfman and George Perez.
Correct.
And then when Johns came along, it was just Johns, I think, in Infinite Crisis. And that's when I think at the end of it, it blew back out. And then they followed up with 52 and then Final Crisis.
Right. Okay.
Morrison stuff. So. And that was kind of like what happened with Flashpoint. There was a DC reboot tool to really say, look, we're clearing the deck. You may know all these stories. They're still sort of there, but we're going to start from scratch. And that's when the John Byrne
And that's
stuff.
When John Byrne – and that was my first Comic-Con. But
oh.
Yeah, that was when John Byrne took over, and that was – I loved that version of Superman. They made him as human as they possibly could. Then when he was shot from Krypton, he was an embryo in a ship. Then when he got to Earth, the ship opened up. So he was technically born on Earth.
Oh, okay.
So I always loved that. And I loved that if he had to stop a train, he was being pushed back. He wasn't this powerhouse. He didn't gain his powers right away. It took him up until I think he was in his teens. Kind of like the way they did in Smallville. Mm-hmm. Similar to Smallville. Like he had to build up to it. There was no Superboy. You know, not until he was older he became Superman, and that was with his first appearance. And even Lois Lane, similar to the movie, was hunting him down. This is John Byrne's Man of Steel miniseries, mm-hmm. when he did the reboot. And she was hunting, the way she did in the movie, she was hunting him down.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Same similarities.
Came from. Okay.
So I loved, that was my favorite Superman time.
And they kept the parents alive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
They kept both parents alive.
So that you could have that whole Smallville thing played off of.
Was the last Kryptonian. There was no Kara. There was no other Kryptonians, just him.
Oh, that's right, because Kara was the Earth 2 sort of cousin, right?
Right.
Because there wasn't really one in the Silver Age, or was
there?
No, there
was. Yeah,
okay, there was a Supergirl. Okay. And then Superboy, of course, and Krypto. I mean, so they got rid of a lot of the kind of trappings of the Silver Age.
Right.
And so then this Superman kind of grew into the mulleted Superman and the red and blue
90s.
Superman.
Then the 90s.
Then they killed him. They killed him. Then they brought him back with a mullet and then the red and blue.
I had that mullet.
You know what's really funny is I remember the first time I was allowed to like go off in the mall and go to like go whatever and had to be back at a spot at a certain time.
Right.
In court probably. I walked into a comic book store and that's what it was. Actually, no, I take that back. We were at one of our rivals when they used to be off of like Hiawassee and Old Winter Garden. And I walked in there and I was like, Superman's red and blue? And that's when they're like, kid, are you going to buy that or get out? And I'm like, well, that's the end of that. And I never shopped at that store again.
Those were some hard times.
So hard I guess one of the things is, why do so many writers decide they need to reinvent Superman over the years? I mean, Batman, for the most part, has not had this kind of extensive reboot.
Right.
Green Lantern, a little bit more so recently with, well, not recently, but 10 years ago with Geoff Johns stuff.
Right.
But, you know, it seems like a trend where writers really struggle to find good stories to tell with Superman without throwing new things or reinventing him or just, you know. So that's
right.
Kind of an interesting problem.
That's true. I mean, they always, the biggest complaint that I always like read about was that, you know, he's so hard to write. You know, but I saw Geoff Johns, he wrote him beautifully. Oh. I liked John Byrne's up until he threw him in space.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, I'm out. And he grew a beard. It was manly.
Ooh. Oh, I did like
that. Yeah, he had a beard. It's very like Hercules.
Ooh.
I wanted to see him in the movie. I wanted to see him shave with a mirror.
That would have been awesome.
I envisioned that would have been so cool because that's how it normally does.
I think bearded Superman needs to become a thing again.
Calm down.
Well, so now with the new, the reboot,
right,
with the new 52, we're now in a place where
Super Bear.
I may have to commission that.
Right.
But no, he's kind of, like I said, Morrison really tried to throw him back more to the kind of, not dick, but a bully of bullies.
And, I liked it. Did you like it, Tyler?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. What I was going to say is also, earlier what you were talking about, how they made it to where, like, his powers weren't just there, and they, like, developed over time. Like, Grant Morrison also threw him back at that, because, like, in action,
right,
they talked about so much about how he's not as strong as he will be, and mm-hmm. like he's, you know, he's 18 and in the city, and so he's like not fully Superman yet.
Right, he was leaping, he wasn't flying.
Yeah, no,
right.
Yet.
Originally, he didn't fly.
It's right.
So, and they got rid of the underwear.
I love that,
which is always a good thing, I think. Right.
Well, I was told we was now starting on to the new 52. Right. You know, I think Superman did great. I love Geoff Johns' run on Superman. I thought he wrote him really well. You know, I loved Brainiac was one of my favorites.
The Legion
was great. Yeah. The Bizarro was great. The Richard Donner, him and Richard Donner,
yes,
teaming up.
That was excellent.
You know, that was fantastic. But, you know, then the reboot. Yep. Then the reboot happened.
Actually, even the Greg Rucka stuff, when Superman kind of, they did the City of Kandor and the new Krypton stuff, the stuff that Rucka did with Action Comics, what's his name? Not Superman.
Mon-El
and Firebird or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of cool, too. Like, it was sort of honoring some of the crazier, like, all of that stuff seemed to be the writers wanting to bring the Silver Age stuff back into current continuity, you know, and then play with that. Like, you know, John's brought the Legion stuff back, Superboy, the Brainiac stuff, so.
Yeah, I love that. That was my favorite when he did the Brainiac and then bringing how he brought General Zod, that General Zod actually protected Krypton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which I love that one. That I thought was brilliant. And then as well as how he explained why Non. You know, that, you know, in the movie, he was just a mute in Superman 2.
That's right.
And then Geoff Johns explained it that, like, Jor-El was going to the council saying, look, Krypton's going to be destroyed. Non went to the people.
Right.
So the council had him lobotomized.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that was badass. So I became a big fan of that.
Where does Superman Red Son fall into that? Because that's my favorite story. Like, I love Last Son of Krypton. I love Superman Brainiac. I've read some of the, like, the new Krypton stuff. But, like, that, for me, is how I like Batman and Superman. Like, really twisted, strange stories that are set apart so people don't bitch and moan that it doesn't make sense in continuity.
Right.
That was, like, after the 52 expansion. Right, like to the from the one world to the 52 back.
Oh, the multiverse.
Right. That was after that. Right, Red Son was supposed to be after that.
Well, no, I think Red Son was like an Elseworlds thing, right?
Yeah, they did a big series. Like Marvel had What Ifs, DC had Elseworlds, and not a lot of the Elseworlds really held up, except for Red Son, Kingdom Come. Certain ones really hold up and keep going.
I thought it wasn't. It was told like an Elseworlds tale, but I thought it was. Actually, one of the other worlds.
Well, I think it was retrofitted to be that later.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
But yeah, anyway, we should talk about these other books because they kind of don't fit exactly. Mm-hmm. Red Son's one, of course, Mark Miller. I forgot the artist.
Yeah, Superman's a commie.
That was great.
And it was really interesting to see that even in spite of the way he was raised and it being very different, some of the core elements of his personality and his character come through, and he does what's best for his country.
Right.
So that was always good. The Secret Identity one is one of my sort of modern favorites. Kurt Busiek and Stuart Immonen, which if you see Immonen's art now and you go back and you look at that stuff, they're very different. His style has like evolved like and gone in weird different directions. But the premise behind this is kind of set in our world. It's kind of like the Marvel take on Superman. If Marvel was like the real world and DC was the comic world. And so you see this sort of, he's growing up as Clark Kent, and that's his name. But he's aware that there's a Clark Kent who's Superman.
Didn't they have comic books?
Yeah, they had comic books. Yeah. And so then he kind of grows, and I think he gets superpowers by some, you know, I forgot how it happens. But he basically becomes Superman.
I thought that's how Prime came about.
This is what happened. So Secret Identity came out, and again, it was Elseworlds. And then someone thought... Oh, I think maybe it was Geoff Johns. This is a nice way to create this, or Superboy Prime or whatever. So it's like that's his unofficial origin. But just by itself, like he goes through and he gets old. That's something, again, you only see in All-Star Superman and maybe occasional other weird stories. Superman gets to have an arc and actually age and die. So I don't know if he actually dies or not, but it's just a nice touching sort of personal look at this person's, you know, life and character.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing. I mean, this is, you know, before Geoff Johns, but like Alan Moore's, like, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
You actually gave me to read that over the weekend. And like, that was, and like, I loved it. Like, it was like, I was like, holy crap. And it was funny because like Clark comes back in and like starts making fun of Superman.
Yep.
And like, as like this alternate ego. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought it was hysterical. I was like, yeah.
Well, and that was very much like the Alan Moore's take on the Silver Age.
Right.
And they kind of meant to show, like, the transition. I think they did it right before Final, or,
No, Crisis. They did it right after Crisis on Infinite.
Right after?
That was that Superman saying goodbye, and right before John Byrne's thing came out. That was that miniseries closing out.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Now, not to bring everybody down, but,
oh, boy.
Like, do you see the, Like, I know people criticize books left and right. Like, you and I, Eric, and you, Taylor, you know, everyone in this room has heard it time and time before. But do you see where some of the criticism comes from? Because, like, I don't hate Superman. I just find that I dislike a lot of those stories because sometimes there's very little grit. Sometimes it seems truly squeaky clean, or you know how this is going to play out, or it's just kryptonite or something like that. You never see any of the struggle. I mean, like, for example, if you look at Superman, like Hercules is a demigod. And so you see that human struggle, and Superman's not human at all. He's human, like, innately because he grew up here. But there's sometimes you feel like there's no real, like, weight to his stories. Like, there's
no peril.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Thank you.
And I think, and you know, I've heard a few writers talk about this. I think one of the things you have to realize is it's not Superman's body that can be hurt. It's his personality. It's his heart. It's very easy for people to break Superman's heart and for his friends and his extended cast to be in peril themselves. And that's where that sense of, oh no, that's where that comes from. That's where Superman himself is like, he's not going to die. I mean, they killed him, but obviously it didn't take and it didn't take long, really, right, when that happened, to get back to that continuity or the status quo. So, I mean, it's really the people around him you have to use as a lens to sort of see that peril, to see that, and that heartbreak that he goes through when the people he loves makes bad decisions, or, you know, bad guys do things that really, you know, breaks his heart.
What really broke his heart that touched me is, like, when, you know, they were doing President Luthor. Mm. Like, and then he saw that Luthor won. And he was just, like, disgusted that how did the world vote for him after everything he's done.
Right.
You know, how did he just overlook that? And we have Rick Scott. But I'm just saying.
It was Lex Luthor.
Yeah, what you guys are saying now is making me think of the Superman Earth 1 graphic novels by JMS. And in those, in the second one, I honestly didn't love those. But the second one, he had this problem where there was a dictator who said, Superman, if you don't get out of my country right now, I'm going to start killing people. And that was an interesting problem for Superman. I was really excited to see how he was going to solve it. But the whole graphic novel goes by, he doesn't really address it. And at the very end, he comes back and just puts guns in the hands of, like, the rebels, and they overthrow the dictator. And he's like, bye, and he peace out, and they, like, kill the guy. And I was like, is that really what Superman would do? I mean, these are sort of more in line with Man of Steel, like a darker take. More trying to be more realistic, but, like, I don't think that was a good, you know, solution.
Right. Well, not knowing right from wrong, not having 75 years.
Yeah.
And that's what I think they want to make him. Now they're trying to build with him, make him relatable, make him that, like, you know, okay, if you had all this power, how would you handle it?
I mean, nobody wants to read 300 issues of a man showing restraint. Like, there's just...
No, I usually... The least interesting Superman stories are the one where it's like a punching match, because, of course, he's going to win because he's Superman. Right. But I just find the one where he's asked to make a decision where, like, punching things doesn't help. Those are, like, the best ones.
Well, and Kingdom Come is a lot like that. I didn't put this on the list, but it is very much a Superman story. And it's another case where it's a Superman story where you see him down the road after humanity has, like, broken his heart so much that he leaves because they've put this person, Magog or whatever, and they've held this guy up to be the hero that Superman couldn't be because he kills. And so, again, it's seeing that man just heartbroken and knowing that he really can't – as powerful as he is, as much as he can do, he cannot save everybody, and he can't save humanity from itself. Ultimately.
Right. Oh, that's the big thing. That's always been the big thing with him.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about All-Star Superman yet, right?
Just mention it in passing.
Yeah. But that has my favorite Superman moment ever in it, when that girl, Reagan, I think her name is, is about to commit suicide, and he, like, flies up and, like, just gives her a hug and, like, wraps her in his cape and just says, you know, you're stronger than you think you are. I feel like that's like the essence of Superman, is that he, like, inspires humanity to, like, be, like, as best as good as they can, even though they might not be Superman like him, but they can still be, you know. That I think that's the overall message of Superman, of why people gravitate towards him.
Yeah,
right. But that's going back to, like, everybody saying he's the Boy Scout. You know, of like, you know, that would be something of a Boy Scout. And that's why people don't like him. And
yeah.
That's what, you know, so it's back and forth. It's the two-sided there.
Yeah.
That I could see what Joshua was talking about. Well, Q, or what do I talk
about? You can call me Joshua.
I call you Joshua now. That's what Joshua was saying. And it's exactly what a lot of people are ripped apart about. Yeah. Like, they want to see him kill, but then they get upset when he kills. They want to see him do something like Joshua, and then they get upset when he does that. So there's no appeasing.
You can't please everybody.
Exactly.
So. I mean, I'll tell you right now, All-Star Superman is probably my favorite Superman story, so much so that I almost at times like had a semi-religious experience reading it, not because of Morrison or anything, just because of how much the character resonated with my religious beliefs. And this sounds ridiculous. I'm going to say it anyway. I said it recently, and someone gave me like the weirdest look. I said, honestly, I hold three people, and two of them or one of them or whatever you want to believe is fiction – I hold Jesus, Superman, and the Doctor up as like my trinity of inspiration. And these are three people I will always want to hear stories about because they inspire me to be a better person, to be a better man. Are the stakes not always as high because of that? Yeah. Doctor is always going to win. Jesus always comes back from the dead and saves humanity. And same thing with Superman. In fact, as we'll talk about in a little bit, the new movie – beats you over the friggin' head with its Christ allegory. So
he was Christ the Redeemer flying out of the ship.
But, I mean, you know, it is something that makes for a challenge, I think, telling a good story. Because you want characters that have flaws. You want characters that can be in peril and change. And a lot of Superman stories, they just don't really give you that opportunity.
No.
Birthright is a fascinating one because it is very much like the new movie, in that you see Superman in a modern context coming to grips with his powers, but yet you see...
And doing the exact journey.
You see him on a journey. You see him in, like, Africa. I mean, how often do you read stories of Superman in Africa as a journalist? It was just really cool because it gave you this bizarre sort of context to put Superman in. And showing his frustration in a situation where he tried to save a village... when his like best friend, who is a journalist or somebody else, a community organizer, let's say, was in peril and ended up getting killed because he couldn't save both.
Well, that's like in Our World's at War, so he's off doing all these other things, trying to save the world from Imperix, and Lois is freaking out, telling him to get back there because... they're attacking and her dad's about to sacrifice himself and then her dad dies and then Superman goes and then like Superman shows up like 2 minutes late and then like Lois is crying and he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And like you see like the struggle, like that's one book that like you really do see his like mental, physical, every kind of struggle. And like, I don't know, like I like had to put the book down like whenever like Lois like runs in the other room and it's just like bawling and Superman just standing there like staring.
Again, you can see his heartbreak, you know, and any character you can see that. So it's nothing unique to Superman, but especially with Superman, it's really what you can mess with the most.
Right.
We haven't talked a lot about his supporting group, and they kind of change over the years. So each comic has its own take on him. Some completely ignore like all the Daily Planet people except for Lois and Jimmy.
Lois, Jimmy, Perry.
Cat and then
comes and goes.
Yeah.
Steve Lombard comes and goes.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, elements like Crypto and Fortress of Solitude, and how much does Superman do in the Fortress of Solitude? Is he like a science tinkerer? Does he just go there to talk to his dead dad? I mean, like, you know.
There's a zoo now, right?
Does he have a zoo? You know, is he like feeding antimatter to black hole eaters? I mean, he has an interesting thing. Oh, does he have a giant key to get in the door? I mean,
a small little key under the mat.
That's right. So, I mean, are there any of those elements that really stand out that you love? I'll tell you, I love Crypto. I mean, I'm a dog lover, of course, but I was so touched by not just the most recent thing when Morrison brought Crypto back,
beautiful.
I mean, dog lovers, if you – I forgot what issue it is. I think it was an annual.
No, it was 14. Around
which one is this? I forget.
The one they did that whole issue of just Crypto. Of Crypto was that phantom, that ghost that always.
Oh, the ghost
over
of
Clark.
The Fortress of Solitude? Okay.
And then, like.
The Halloween issue?
Basically, like, stuck in the.
Yeah.
The
but zone. I mean. Oh, yeah. But even, like, the John stuff when he brought Crypto back as an actual character and then passed them off to Connor as a dog companion, like, all that stuff was really cool. So I love Crypto.
But the dog looks like a wolf now. Like a straight up wolf. It doesn't look like a cute dog anymore.
They've definitely gone that route, which is okay.
Because it needs to be cool and edgy in New 52.
Yeah. He can't have underwear outside anymore. Well, that is a big change, actually, in the mythos. The fact that his suit is now not something Ma Kent helped him make, or that he bought, you know, T-shirts or whatever in the early Morrison stuff, but now it's an actual battle armor.
Kryptonian armor.
Kryptonian armor thing. That,
yeah, it goes like over his body.
I liked in the New 52 that when he put it on, it went to his family's crest.
Yeah.
It was all white until he put it on.
See, and I wish, kind of, again, we're going to get to the movie. I keep teasing it, but I kind of wish that they had stuck with that in the movie instead of what they ended up doing, but it was close, you know.
So. Right.
Well, I liked, like, whenever it was, like, his blanket and, like, you know, his, like, Ma Kent, like, so it's still Kryptonian, so it was still indestructible.
Birthright
but, like,
did
she,
that.
Like, yeah, and but she, like, sewed it up for him. Like,
wait, how did she
like,
sew an indestructible blanket?
No, he cut it out. Right. He cut it out with his heat vision.
Oh.
And then, but yeah, then how.
But she sewed it up. All right, come on.
Okay.
She ate him. So now we're going to get into the movies. And my favorites are the Richard Donners. I mean, I love the new one. But, I mean, growing up, I watched Superman 1 and 2 over and over. I had a six-hour version of Superman the movie. Okay, the first 3 hours was Krypton. I wanted to kill myself of the desolate planet. But
so there's like a longer edit that's like that.
There's
that
a
long?
6 hour version. The first 6 hours of him and Krypton up until he crash lands on Earth. No, I'm sorry. It ends when he flies out of the fortress.
Uh-huh.
That's the first 6 hours. I mean, 3 hours. And then the next 3 hours is when he first hits Metropolis.
Good God.
Yeah.
I thought the beginning of Man of Steel was long. That's crazy.
It was crazy. And I ate it up. I never watched the first VHS. But I watched the second one a lot. Uh-huh.
The first two are so different. The first one has, like, you know, the wonky fly around the Earth until it reverses in time. Oh. So it can save one person, Lois. Whereas the second one was, like, this more, he's like, you know, he loses his powers. He's like the Zod and Feora.
He gives
and,
up his powers.
He gives
right?
up and his powers to have
Ursa,
sex with Lois.
Not Feora.
To have sex with Lois.
To have sex with Lois. He loved her. He wanted to do her.
Yeah.
And the only way that
he wanted to do her.
Yeah. If you do the Richard Donner's cut, it's him talking to his father.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was a very dark moment. And that, you know, he's talking to his father, I want to, you know, be with her. And he goes, the only way, you have to become one of them. And so the red light, you know, the kryptonite, the red sun starts.
Uh-huh.
And Jor-El, his image just looks up at Lois. And she's in the Superman shirt. And he just stares at her as and she's like steps back. Like, oh, God.
Oh, girl, you better have
him. You better make him happy.
You mentioned Feora. It's interesting. This is the original was Ursa and Non. But then the Feora and somebody else came along later because there was a rights issue.
Was that the whole thing? Because I know even in the animated series there was Jaxor and I think it was
somebody
her again.
It was a rights issue and something about the movie rights and the characters and yeah, that's why either that's why or they're going back to a different one because of that or something. So.
The only time that I've seen Ursa and Non constantly used is in Jeff Johns. When he brought General Zod back, he brought back Non and Ursa.
Yeah, it was a Donner, a continuation of the Donner
stuff.
So the Donner stuff ends with like midway through the second one or whatever. What about the third one? I can tell you from personal experience, it scared the shit out of me when I was a child.
Well, come on, the first, and the first 15 minutes of the movie, everything happens. Everything that could go wrong goes wrong. The car hits the fire hydrant, the people are drowning in there, the thing falls off this way, the building, you know, everything's happening.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that was the guy who finished Superman 2, Richard Lester. Oh. Doing that jokey, quirky kind of stuff with Superman.
Well, he is sick and crazy because he did this stop-motion animation thing where the girl, I forgot her name, becomes, I'll call her Velma because she reminded me of Velma from Scooby-Doo. She kind of becomes a robot and is sucked into the machine. That freaked me out. I couldn't watch it. And I love Superman movies. So that scene, like, tainted the third movie. And then I couldn't watch the fourth movie because I was, like, so traumatized.
But somebody here loves the fourth movie.
I love the fourth movie. Because they have like the counter to Superman. Everyone's like, Superman doesn't punch people.
The nuclear man.
Here he is. Yeah, and he gives him the nuclear scratch across the chest, and it's like glowing like cat
bitch.
Scratch. I know. I loved it. And just
Meryl
in anything,
Hemingway.
My favorite in all mediums is to get the doppelganger of the hero, like
Bizarro.
Like yeah, Bizarro for nuclear man. Duh, weren't you paying attention? Mm. but you know, like you know, Link and Dark Link and Sonic and Knuckles and. Mm. you know, the Green Ranger and Power Rangers. Like, I always want to see the evil version. That was, like, the evil version. That was, like, the most epic thing I could see, you know.
Scott and Nega Scott. Yeah.
What?
From Scott
from
Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim.
Oh.
And how it's this big build-up, and then, oh, no, we actually get along really great. So, the fifth movie, we'll say the fifth movie, although actually...
Supergirl. Oh, Supergirl. I know Oral loves Supergirl.
I think this is,
Supergirl.
Like, probably the campiest of all the Superman movies.
And it's my favorite. Like, the other ones, I kind of forget, like... It's been a really, like, probably over a decade since I've seen them. But Supergirl will always stick out in my head. You know, she's in the spaceship, and then she, like, flies out of the spaceship and out of the lake, and she's just there. And, you know, she's wearing this, like, schoolgirl outfit, and she's got a boyfriend, and, you know, there's a witch. And
are there roller skates?
In my mind, there are. I can't remember.
What's but there's there? Faye Dunaway.
Faye there Dunaway and Faye Brendan Dunaway. Vaccaro.
And Olivia Newton-John, mm-hmm. she show up? No, I don't know. She's like, she should. Beauty School Trap? No, it's not Grease. No.
I love that movie. The worst part was the Phantom Zone, though, when she was all dirty. In that it was like a tar zone.
So is that like the thing that Tasha Yar got sucked into in Next Gen?
Yes.
Nice. I've seen that, but I'm assuming yes. Mm-hmm. Yet she had to drink black tar water. It was horrific.
Did she have like an alter ego, too, that had some bizarre name? What was the all the characters? Was that it, Linda Danvers?
Linda Danvers. And Peter O'Toole was her uncle in the Phantom Zone.
What? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
uncle or father? Uncle.
He's the one who gave her the tar water.
He's the one who said, here, drink this bitch.
She has a cute little, like, bracelet that's actually a computer. Oh, I love this movie.
Are you serious, or is that Jim?
No, she actually
it's
did.
Really, seriously? Yeah. Oh my God. And when she got close to the Omega Hendron, it would glow. Yeah.
I feel like we do a whole podcast.
I really just on Supergirl.
Why don't we do, like, what is that Mystery Science 3000 thing? Let's do that for Supergirl.
I think that movie fits the bill across the board.
It's coming, listeners.
So then there was Superman Returns, which is, now, hold on. It was very much a continuation of this Donner sort of incarnation of Superman, done, what, 30-some-odd years later by a completely different director, Bryan Singer, trying very hard to recapture what he loved, and then kind of screwing the pooch because it was boring, Superman didn't really do anything interesting, and everybody was acting like they were these other people, other actors playing these characters. So they really couldn't, you know.
Right, they were
do their
forced
own thing.
To.
They were all
repeat.
Doing. They're all doing impressions and, instead
yeah,
of
exactly.
acting.
Yeah.
You know.
And I'm sorry when I saw the movie on opening night, and I'm sitting there when he saved the airplane, and I said verbatim because I knew Christopher Reeve's line of it's, "Flying is still the safest way to travel," and I said it with him. I'm like, "Oh no, this will never do."
Yeah.
And that's when I knew something.
It was
wrong
like
with
a drag
movie.
Performance of Superman. And that is awesome. Should not be a bad thing. In fact, I bet a drag performance as Superman or Supergirl or Power Girl would be awesome.
That's funny.
But
hell.
Movie-wise,
oh
not
my
so amazing.
God, I just had this idea. Where
there were no black people on Krypton.
No. You have Supergirl and Power Girl doing the opening theme to the Patty Duke show. Pam, pam, and bitches.
Oh, my.
No.
We'll save that for your special project.
What did you think of Returns?
Well, I thought that, all right, so Brandon Routh, I feel, yeah, the director was like, hey, you need to do a Christopher Reeves
impression. He thought he was attractive.
Period, yeah.
Wait, is it Reeves or Reeve?
I say Reeves.
Yeah, Reeves.
Christopher
Reeves.
That's
at the end.
Reeves? Yeah, I think it's Reeves.
There was, you know.
Nah, he's dead. Reeves, move on.
But Christopher Reeves. But anyway, so, but like Brandon Routh, like he... It, like, I feel like he wasn't a bad actor. Like, he did a good impersonation of Christopher Reeves, you know? So, I mean, like, it was... I feel like it was more like a directorial issue. But, like, one of my favorite parts about the movie, and I think that they kind of wasted it on this movie, was having Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor.
I thought he was excellent.
Night.
I thought that, like... Oh, like, imagine Kevin Spacey... In, you know, Man of Steel 2.
I was going to say, they should bring him back as Lex Luthor.
Oh my gosh, he would kill it. And like,
did you not like the ending then? I mean, I know Lois Lane, she's okay. But I kind of like the idea that Superman actually can have a child. Like, that's an interesting thing.
Heart and soul.
Heart
and soul.
Does that song have a certain meaning to you? Heart and soul.
What is that from?
The movie.
Piano when the kids
yeah,
play.
The melody.
Oh,
plays.
Okay.
That
and
melody
then he,
everyone
and
always
then
plays
Super,
on piano.
Superman's son murders a guy. Okay. It's just,
yeah, exactly. But
sorry.
You know, everybody's not, you know, that's not upsetting anybody.
Superman.
He just crushed somebody with a piano. That's
okay.
So, The Man of Steel, then, was very much what? A reaction to the lack of interesting fights and sort of bigger Superman moments?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about how he didn't even throw a punch.
He didn't throw a punch.
Yeah. Not a single punch.
So people didn't like it because of the whole kryptonite.
He kryptonite. Like
he bench pressed that. What were you saying, Eric, about the kryptonite?
Oh, with the kryptonite, if you put, like, Batman has a ring of kryptonite. Yeah. It drops Superman like a brick. Done. But yet he could pick up a mountain. Of kryptonite,
I'm out of
without
kryptonite.
A problem,
and throw it into space,
and throw it into space, and all he did was break his sweat, a little bead of sweat,
no green skin, nothing,
no torture. Yeah, you didn't see like really poisoning him, nothing.
So the Man of Steel made what 5-6 years later, finally reaction to that, lots of punching, no kryptonite though. Kind of curious.
Well, they had the atmosphere, which was the new kryptonite.
Oh, that was supposed to be. Oh, that's right.
Right, he's powerless.
Yeah.
And he's like falling over, coughing up blood.
So we're going to go around and do our nice things about the movie. Okay. And then we will
dish. Thanksgiving, but we're thankful for.
We're thankful for. Taylor, you go first.
Well, I loved how like relatable they made Superman, like that they showed the struggle that he had growing into himself as a, you know, as a person and as a superhero. Like, you see him traveling around all these different cities and jobs, and just because, you know, he kind of had this conflicted father who was like, you need to, you know, do the right thing, but at the same time, you need to hide who you are all the time and not even have, like, a secret identity or anything like that, just trying to, basically trying to oppress him, and yet, like, he's trying to struggle to grow into his own man, and I loved that part about him. Like, I think that it would bring even like Superman haters or people who know nothing about Superman, they can be like, wow, yeah, you know, Superman is pretty cool.
Yeah. Oral.
I love that this was more of a sci-fi epic, which I think works really well for Superman. I love the depiction of Krypton and how it's just like desolate place that has a few like city spires in it. I love that not only do we have a caste system, but we have, like, this eugenics program for, you know, Krypton. Because, like, in my mind, sometimes they portray Krypton as this really great place
utopia,
to live.
Yeah.
Utopia. But, you know, they just got haughty and things fell apart. And then you realize that they're actually a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
They're actually a bunch of dicks. I like their headpieces, though. and, like,
nice.
Henry Cavill, who was, you know, Sir Brandon and the Tudors, is just...
Oh,
fucking
yeah.
Fantastic.
I may have to go back and watch that.
I think he's gorgeous, and I think he did a really
awesome
job.
Wasn't he in Stardust, too?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Was he?
Yeah.
Was he in Stardust?
And
he
Immortals.
Was the lead.
And he was in Immortals. Oh, he looked good as Immortals.
Oh, and I went to go see Immortals.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, and he just has pecs the size of
he's
dinner plates.
So I have three things nice to say about this movie, and that was one of them. I really like Henry Cavill, especially shirtless and bearded. The music
Super
was amazing.
Bear. Yeah. Super Bear?
Super Bear. Oh, that's a great idea. The music was amazing. I would listen to the Hans Zimmer soundtrack. In fact,
so
I do all
good.
The time. Even though people don't like it because it's not as awesome as John Williams. Well, you know what? It's different, but it works. And I really like Jor-El, Gladiator Jor-El, Avatar Jor-El, Scuba Gear Jor-El.
Because
Jor-El.
He looks like a bear, right?
No, I love Russell Crowe, but he is very bearish. But, I kind of like the idea that in this
shocking,
this
he likes
dystopian...
daddy, not the son.
Very well put. Very well put. No, I mean, I like that his dad was a bit of a badass. Because hell,
yeah, did you like how he was the top scientist who could also beat up the top military general?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's how he's written a lot of times. Too,
yeah.
Is that Jor-El wasn't just a science nerd? Like he and like recently in. It was in Superman, not action. But yeah, it was in Superman. It was like a flashback, and Lara though also like beat the crap out of like all these different soldiers, and it shows that they're like kind of like the peak of mental and physical Kryptonians.
Yeah.
So I loved that he beat the crap out of Zod.
And even as Navi, when he was guiding Lois around in the video game level, I like that. So those are my three things that I liked, Joshua.
I also loved Jor-El in the movie with, like, you know, the opening Krypton scene could have been, like, right out of a Star Wars movie with the, like, the space cow when Kal-El was born, you know, like, and, so cool. And I really enjoy it, like when, you know, he puts on the body armor, like comes down over him and,
oh, yeah.
And he has the, that fight. And I really enjoyed all that. And I really enjoyed sort of, they really built up some really like kind of inspirational classic Superman moments that like gave me tingles and maybe made me a little teary eyed. The first one was when he finally found out who he was, like in the ship. And then he went out and started flying. And that was just like, because the whole movie, he's so depressed, and yeah. his father's like, don't do this, don't do that, and like he's like being like, can't be who he wants to be like, his whole life, and finally he can just be free and fly, and I thought that was so good.
Did you say tingles? Because I got tingles.
Oh, I got some mad tingles.
Wow, and then like two totally different tingles.
and then also when his father is like, you know, on the spaceship, and he's like, strike that panel, and he points out Lois, and he says, you can save her. You can save all of them. And he just floats out into space. And I know it was super Jesus moment.
Christ the Redeemer.
Christ the Redeemer. Yeah. Along with a bunch of other religious imagery. Like, he's 33 years old, like Christ. And he's, you know, him right next to Christ in the window in the church.
So you liked
draped in red. Well, I didn't love the Jesus stuff, but I loved the moment he created of when he finally, you know, visually we got to see him float into space above the earth, you know, being given this message from his father that, like, you know, now you can, and where his other father was like, you cannot do anything. You can't save people. Don't save me. In that heartbreaking scene where the tornado took him. Mm-hmm. Now he's like, you can do it now. You can save them. Like, now is, like, when you need to rise
now
up.
Now is
and
the
be,
time.
Is to be Superman. So I was like, ah, I love that.
Yeah. But good payoff.
Eric?
My turn? Okay. One of the things that I really loved about the movie is that Lois Lane was not galactically stupid. That she was actually a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist.
Good at Google.
Yeah, she should be.
I liked it. I liked that she was able to find him all the way up until she was at the gravesite of his father.
Yeah.
You know, and I liked the fact that she knows that Clark was Superman.
Yeah.
You know, that showed that she was smart, that she was worthy of that title.
Right.
You
There's
know?
No reason why she should never know.
Not exactly. Know. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's like I hate that they say stupid things like blinded by true love, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I like that they had her actually find out who he was. That was one of my favorite scenes. Henry Cavill was just so dreamy.
Yeah.
But then the whole battle. I loved seeing the comic book destruction of Metropolis.
Dragon Ball Z.
Jesus Christ, it was Dragon Ball Z.
Holy crap. It's the way, you know, every cartoon I've watched when Superman kicks the shit out of Darkseid of Metropolis being destroyed. Every comic book when Superman has a battle of Metropolis being destroyed. And to see it now.
Yeah.
To finally see, like, him getting hit and getting thrown through buildings.
Busted the shit out of that city.
You know? And I loved every moment. And I even loved the actor who played General Zod.
Shannon.
I liked him a lot.
I thought he was fantastic. He was dark, all the Kryptonians.
Dark, but with purpose. And a very specific purpose. And actually, I did like that, too. That the movie identified. This is his purpose. This is what I'm protecting Krypton. And if I have a chance to
Krypton
bring Krypton
and his
back,
people, yeah.
I will do that. I will do whatever it takes. I don't care if I'm fucking up your home world. I don't care if I'm I don't care. I'm going to do it. So.
And that's what he was bred for.
Honestly, all of the acting in the movie was... I know it's not my turn anymore, but all of the acting in the movie was amazing.
Please. Like, actually, while we're at it, let's start going about what we didn't like. This will be more fun.
I mean, I want to preface it with saying that I loved the movie. We might want to go the other way because I have a lot of things that I think that could have been better about it.
Okay.
Because
what I didn't like about the movie, honestly, and I'm probably the only one here, I loved it all. I loved that I saw it twice. I'm going for a third.
Ooh.
I loved it. I got to see Superman the way I wanted to see Superman.
Max.
You know, and I'm proud of what they gave me, and I can't wait to own the Blu-ray to watch it 100 times the way I watched Superman 1 and 2.
Uh-huh.
You know, and
so a worthy new addition to the Superman canon.
Yes, it showed me a Superman that I've been longing to see.
Okay.
You know, since I was happy. It grew with me. So with that.
Joshua.
Let's see. I've had a couple different reactions because I've seen it 3 times. First time I saw it, I hated it. And I'll tell you why in a sec. And second time I saw it, I really liked it because those like tingly moments really got me. Mm-hmm. Like, because I knew what to expect. I went in with hardcore expectations and, you know, disappointment of like Superman Returns and like getting so excited and the great trailers. So I loved it the second time. And the third time, I was just like all right with it. I was like content with it and I could accept it as not a great Superman movie, but a great dark Superman movie. Because the thing that really bummed me out and has been very like polarizing for fans
Ultimate spoiler alert.
Yeah, ultimate spoiler is that Superman straight up kills Zod at the end.
Yep.
And they put him in a situation where he couldn't have done anything else. But I just think of if I saw this when I like 10 years ago when I was like a kid, would I like look up to Superman and be like, oh yeah, I love Superman. He gets so emotionally tortured that he has to snap people's necks and scream in pain.
But look at Wolverine.
That's
and how many 10-year-olds worship him. And
yeah.
He does
no, that's
and
totally
dice.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that the Wolverine's determinedly not Superman.
Yeah.
And he doesn't pretend to be. And
he's Wolverine's worship.
They're both hairy men who drink beer. Yeah. I'll give you that. But no, this is Superman. And Superman doesn't do that. And of course you can look back and even Superman 2, which everybody loves and is like a classic. He just throws Zod against the wall and he falls into a pit. Lois Lane turns around and punches Feyora. She falls into
Ursa.
Oh, what? Oh, sorry, Ursa. Yeah, and then, what's...
And Nan just trips.
And Nan goes, and he just like, falls into that because he tries to fly. And, you know, there are other instances of Superman killing people, whatever, but this was, it was too much. I didn't like it. He should have found a way to, like, incapacitate Zod and, like, put him in prison or something like that. Or in the original cut, did you know this? Original cut, or original script, I should say. Zod just got sucked in the Phantom Zone, and they were all gone. They felt they wasn't satisfying enough, so they had him like be the one remaining, and they had him fight and kill Zod to be more satisfying to the audience.
Yep.
And Christopher Nolan, who we can agree did a good job on The Dark Knight, knows
Absolutely.
What he's doing, right?
Well,
okay,
well,
he goes.
Yeah,
he said. He, you know what he said? He goes, no, you can't do that. And they went to DC, and they're like, no, you can't do that. And they're like, oh, but look, if you put him in this situation, he'll have to. And they go, okay, fine, do it. So they like had to be talked into it, reluctantly accept this.
And you can see the leftovers of that in the movie itself. You can see the scene where you think, oh, he'll just get sucked up,
right?
And
yeah,
they could have even had the whole big fight, and then he still got sucked up into that whole thing the way you would edit it. And they didn't because of this.
This is
other
what
thing.
Happened in Last Sun. It's like, you know, they all got sucked back up in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
And I don't. Yeah.
So that's a huge thing. And the Jesus stuff, you didn't.
No, I thought I was okay. I was fine with the Jesus stuff. That's been there since before the movie, and they just like put it back in the movie, which is fine. I'm cool with it. And I also didn't like the just utter destruction of Metropolis without him saving anybody. And even before that, in Smallville, he tackles Zod through a power plant and where they're probably workers and through a 7-Eleven, which explodes. So all customers and employees there are dead. He tackled Zod through that. He could have tackled him into the cornfield, but he kept going. And it was like, what are you doing? Like,
because he wasn't Superman.
I know people pan, you know. No, his whole life he's been saving people. He already knows how to do that. Now he has to be Superman. Normal heroes could let that happen, but Superman has to save people and fight the bad guy. I feel, you know,
so,
and like they did a damage report like on the movie.
Oh, Lord.
They said like $1 trillion of damage, like, trillions of dollars of damage, and like over like I think like 200,000 people would die.
Jesus,
well, come on, big skyscrapers were coming down.
Oh, yeah, and they didn't show that they were like evacuated. What did they, in Avengers? They show Hawkeye and Black Widow helping people out of a bus.
And there's one man.
You're right.
There was six others.
I think
he's Superman. They're not Superman.
We are letting Joshua have the floor.
Okay.
I'm just really airing this out. I've been holding this has been pent up. I mean, I wrote a review online where it was pretty harsh on
that nobody read yet.
Oh, no, a lot of people actually
it.
Had a lot to say.
He gave the movie a 9.975.
No, I read his review and I agree completely. Because, I mean, you've taken, like, most of the things that I thought about the movie. But there are two more that I can add. One, this movie was joyless. How many moments in the film did you feel like any character had any genuine sense of joy or happiness? All of it was angst. All of it was drama. All of it was pathos. The only moment where there could have been a little more fun is when he's learning how to fly and make that a little more lighthearted or make it a little more like he was actually enjoying it. But none of it. None of it. The whole movie was joyless and dark. And I will say this. I'm a Christian. I have religious faith. I believe in Jesus. Yes, the religious allegory was ridiculous. And the biggest affront to me is the ending. Because you set this guy up as a Christ figure. What did Christ do? He died for the world. He saved the world by giving his own life. What did Superman do? He killed the guy. And that pissed me off beyond anything else the movie could have done. I was actually going to leave the theater, probably going, well, it's not my Superman, but it's not bad. I'll enjoy it on Blu-ray or whatever. But when that happened, and I saw it coming a mile away, I mean, this is only going to end with one of them dying, mm-hmm. I just, my heart was broken. Because I told you earlier, my three figures in my life that I hold very dear, Superman, the Doctor, and Jesus. And yes, Superman is killed in the comics. And this is something else I'm trying to wrap my head around, because Superman has killed in the comics. So why should I have a problem with him doing it in this movie? I have a huge problem because they basically made him Jesus. And Jesus wouldn't do that. So those are my two. It's Joyless.
If
I did.
He was in the Old Testament, he would have.
Well, this is very true.
It's
Old
funny.
Testament.
Collapse that.
It's leaf. Funny that you use the word joyless. Did you read Mark Waid's reaction?
I did read
which
that.
Which was the similar to yours.
Yes.
And,
well, so your review and Waid's review, and I talked about it on Comic Book Bears, and I was, I think I was in the minority there. No, I think Bill was also on the same page. But anyway, yeah, it was, there have been many people I've talked to who either hold Superman. See, this is the thing. We have a lot we bring to Superman. We have a lot of our own. I mean, I definitely have a lot I bring to Superman. And is that fair to the character? Well, maybe. But is this the incarnation that I want to see pervade the next generation of Superman fans? No, absolutely not. But I will say there is an out for them, and I hope this is what they do. I hope the next movie shows Superman's extreme remorse and how, yes. how guilty he feels, and that this event is what will forever scarring him, he will never kill again.
Well, I feel like it's going to be the next setting up for the next movie of Luthor stepping in to rebuild, and then Luthor throwing that around, going, yeah. he killed once. Why not again?
And right? that would be excellent, and that would redeem, I think, a lot of it for me. So that's my point.
I don't know. And they also, Zack Snyder said he was, oh, sorry, Oral. Zack Snyder said, you want to know why Superman doesn't kill? Like, this is why he doesn't kill. Because the first and last time he killed was with, he had to kill the last member of his race. Yeah. And he committed a genocide. Like, he had to choose the humans over
ended
Krypton. He could have had either one, and he chose humans because it was nature versus nurture, and, you know,
and
nurture
the dad,
went out.
Pa Kent was also bizarre. Like, I was just like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Should I let him die? Maybe. What? I mean, it's a very honest reaction. It's a very honest reaction, yeah. But I was just like, what?
And I mean, Kevin Costner was brilliant, but, like, it was just a complete writing
bizarre.
Direction flaw.
And
like,
again, I'm going to sacrifice my life. And again, I understand he's his father. He's trying to protect him. He feels like it's in his best interest to not reveal himself, so he sacrifices his own life. But come on. Come on. Yeah. You didn't have to do that.
Right. Anyway. No, yeah. And then also, I love how he never let him fight. And so the end fight scene, it's this boy who's never thrown a punch ever
That's
in his
true,
life
fighting a
against
warrior.
These military experts yeah. who were like kicking his. How can he even stand up to them? I don't understand.
Okay, so I was at work today, and they were playing Avengers in the Geekeasy, and I walked in. I'm like, you know what's wrong with this movie? They're saving everybody because you have this intergalactic armada. That's just descending on New York.
And you got to save those people from the bus.
Yeah, you got to save the people from the bus. You have to save the people from falling off the cliff. There are more important things that you have to do. I understand all life is precious. But if you have this looming threat that not, like, one person, but six people have to join together to, like, defeat, shouldn't you be focused on that? Rather than, trying to split your resources. And then maybe if you're lucky, you save the day. Like, Superman is fighting Zod. He is fighting someone who has the same power level and power set as himself. Zod is vicious and he embodies evil.
Not just Zod. Like,
Zod and all the other Kryptonians.
Right,
yeah.
Who are all just as powerful
he
as he
is. He is fighting tooth and nail to survive. And when you're in the thick of it, you're not going to look over and see that shitty-ass IHOP that's there. And that's just me being sarcastic, but, I mean, Zod
it's
will
hard to
not
focus.
Stop.
Yeah, you gotta,
Zod
yeah.
is going to destroy the Earth. And it's not just Superman has to, stop all these Kryptonians from destroying Metropolis. He has to fly to the Indian Ocean to stop one half of this gravimetric terraforming system. While the humans do the best they can in Metropolis. Like, people are going to die. In Avengers, when, the Chitauri are crashing through buildings, people are dead. Mm-hmm. There is no, Hawkeye will save all of those people on the 37th floor of this random-ass building that we kind of know from New York backdrops. Like, they are dead. They are dead. And, it's really easy to say, well, you know, it's just, there's just this untold obscene amount of damage in, you know, this movie. That's what comic books are.
Yeah.
That's what these superhero struggles that we love. When Korrigar gets destroyed, how come we're not all up in arms that every Green Lantern and every neighboring sector isn't going in to save them?
But Superman did part of this damage inadvertently by fighting Zod there.
I understand
He could have taken Zod out to the ocean. He could
have
taken Zod.
Yeah, to the moon. Let's have a fight on the moon. You know?
It's just Zod. What about the rest of them?
Yeah. Well,
no, they're all gone by the big fight anyways.
Could he have?
Well, and that's probably what they would say.
And in Avengers, not one building fell over. And Superman is channeling like 9/11 imagery. It was terrible.
No, well, I don't know which
that was depressing.
Yeah, did you not see that big thing when it went through the building? And, I mean,
it didn't fall over. None of the buildings fell over.
It didn't fall over, but still plenty of people would have died.
That's really unrealistic.
You could assume that they were evacuated.
No, they weren't, because you saw people dying in like blazes of glory.
We literally watched a street blow up and fire engulf people.
There is like those police officers didn't make it.
I would say
spectacle. But ultimately, my issue with people saying he killed Zod, evil does not rest. Pure evil. That's what this ultimately is. It's a battle of good versus evil. And they're like, you know, he could have crippled him. He could have done it. No, that is not how the world works. Zod would, say you incapacitate Zod. Zod will come back. Because he has lost everything. And no matter what you do, he will make sure. He's like, I will make sure that all that is left of this planet is dust. And you know what? You have to make that decision.
If Batman can let the Joker live at the end of Dark Knight after all the stuff the Joker did, what excuse does Superman have? You want to know who's going to show up in Man of Steel 2? Batman. It's like, let me tell you about my one rule. It's you don't kill people.
Batman killed tons of people in the first movie.
Who? Like,
what?
Yeah, what are you...
What? Oh, Batman mean with that...
he blows up the monastery or whatever.
Yeah. Not intent...
Oh, you know what? Oh, that was an accident.
But my thing is...
Superman accidentally killed the people in that 7-Eleven.
You know, my ultimate thing is, what is worse? Knowing that this person will do everything they can to exterminate life.
You want
to
know what...
Not even before, after... And you're just like, you're caught between, I have no other recourse. There is no other recourse. I've got news for you. And, you know, it's terrible to say, you know, well, he's like a Christ-like figure, but he's trying to be human. But, you know, in that situation, I'm killing this person. And it's horrible. And it's going to destroy your soul. And we're going to see all of that in the sequel, because we know it's coming, because it just passed $500 million.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But when it's not just your family, when it's not just your city, when it's an entire world hanging in the balance, and one person has to die, that one person has to die. And you cannot blame someone for not being able to find a better alternative
in
the heat of the moment.
It's Wolverine and Age of Ultron. It's there. This is a fundamental philosophical difference you have, Oral, than what I have or what Joshua has, at least I'm assuming, where your perspective is Wolverine's. Wolverine killed Hank Pym, a good guy,
world. That's different, because Hank Pym didn't know that he was going. It's that whole, would you kill
baby
Hitler?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as a child. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about someone
then it's
who
capital
actively,
punishment.
Yeah, that moment. Who is not even capital punishment. Capital punishment is a retrospect. It's a retrospective idea and a prism. What I'm talking about is, I am going to slaughter your family. I'm going to raise this city.
Right.
I'm going to destroy this world. I am going to die. You need to kill me.
No, that's what the Joker says every day. He don't die.
But that makes no sense.
But no, it is capital punishment, because capital punishment, people who believe in it, and I don't.
Well,
I'll be very clear.
Death of the Family, like Batman let go of the Joker and he fell off the cliff and he dropped to his death.
I don't think he was like this.
He goes, no, you only die one way.
Well, I don't think he didn't let him go. I think he slipped. But let me get back to this, because capital punishment is a very philosophically dividing issue. And it is predicated on the fact that there are some criminals who can't be rehabilitated to not kill. And if you believe that is absolute, that there are criminals you need to kill or they will kill again, that's exactly like Zod.
No, what I'm saying, that's capital punishment happens after, you know, trials and evidence has been brought up. We are talking about Zod has killed, along with all the rest of the Kryptonians, hundreds of thousands of people at this point.
Right. There's no judge. And Superman was judge, jury, and executioner.
But what was he supposed to do? What was he supposed to do? Zod is going to come, like, not even going to come back. Zod is here. He is present. I can either let him kill this family and do God knows what else, and maybe, just maybe, I'll find a way, or I can end this now. You end it now.
Okay. So I think right now we're arguing what Superman should have done when we should be arguing over what the writer should have done. In that situation, Superman was given no other choice. There was no he didn't have a Phantom Zone.
Which,
in
kudos
with
to
him.
Them to making it a floating diamond in space.
Yes.
he had That's no true. Phantom Zone. That. He had no Phantom Zone to trap Zod into.
Yeah.
He had no he didn't even have a Fortress of Solitude.
He wasn't Superman for 30 years. He was Superman for an hour. Well,
right. So he had at that point he had no other choice. And yes, he should the Superman we know and love. Never. Like, even whenever in The Last Son, whenever Zod is getting sucked back up into the Phantom Zone, he is screaming, I'm going to come back and kill everyone you ever know. And
right.
Superman still takes him back from the Phantom Zone. But Superman doesn't have any of that here. Literally, what else? Honestly, if he breaks some of his limbs, he's Kryptonian on Earth with the yellow sun, our worlds at war, Superman's arm breaks and it literally takes 2 hours and then it's fixed. There's no way to incapacitate Zod. There's no way to trap him in a prison.
I understand what you're saying, and I definitely think they did as good a job, even showing how visibly affected he didn't want to do it. They mm-hmm. sold that.
Go on.
I have a fundamental, and there's no talking out of this.
No.
It's a fundamental, just philosophical difference.
Totally.
And I think what makes it the worst for me is that they built up this Christ figure.
The thing is, let's say.
See, everybody's saying they see this Christ figure, and honestly, I didn't see it. The only moment I saw was when he went back for a minute. That was the only second. And it was for a second because he turns around and goes right
but
to Lois.
You heard the other trap.
But I heard it because if I didn't hear it, I would have never noticed.
Let me put it this way.
But,
I don't know if you guys know this. Sorry. They market this movie to churches.
Yeah.
They don't do this for all the films. This is something that, I don't remember the last one they did this for. But they went to churches and said, you really ought to check this out as a church. They had press kits. They had probably screenings.
They gave pastors free passes.
So they were deliberately trying to make this – it wasn't like a subtle – I mean, it was some parts of it were subtle, the 33 years thing. I didn't even notice that.
I didn't see
it. Yeah.
33, I know.
And they went on a journey like Jesus went to the desert. But, there's subtle stuff, and then there's just blatant. And this movie was blatant in these other parts about trying to market this to churches. And I can – as a Christian, I can put myself in that space as a Christian who loves Superman, read comic books, and I'm fine with it. And I see this movie, and it's just, you're pissing on my Christ. You're defacing my
But he's
belief.
Not Christ. That's why everybody keeps saying he's Christ. He's not.
Wait, let me finish.
He's a Kryptonian.
Can I finish what
Joshua
I was going to say before?
Sorry. Yeah.
What I was going to say was that, let's say Superman has to, let's just go with what's in the movie, and there's no changing it. I think they could have sold the moment a little better, because he did look really torn. He's like, please stop, stop, and he breaks his neck. Then he falls to his knees and screams, and Lois comes in. She pets his head, and then it ends. And then there's what I think is one of the worst superhero movie resolutions I've ever seen, to where it goes from this heartbreaking scene, really intense, all this action stuff, to he chucks the the drone. He's like, you want to know I'm going to hang my cape, and then and then a little wink at the camera. Oh, I'm Clark Kent with my glasses, and then it's over. It's and then I think he's hot, and then awkward laughter and. It went from horrible darkness to
dark.
To jokey wink bye, and I was like, what?
That's a good point.
I think if they had, I was waiting for him to talk about what had happened with somebody or mention it.
Have a memorial scene.
Yeah,
do
anything
to solemnify and
and weird and obituary.
What? No,
that
no.
Would be totally
see, the thing
morbid.
Is, the headline after this would not be Superman
totally
saved
morbid.
Us. It'd be like. Oh my God! Crazy alien destroys half of our city. Our
give it
city.
A little bit more of a beat to reflect. Show him really struggling.
Which will probably be in the next movie.
Well, and again, this
no,
is
no,
where
no,
they can
it's
redeem
a happy
it.
Ending.
As far as we're talking about, just what's in this movie, it was incomplete.
So
to you.
They didn't sell that moment at all.
Well, they sold it at that moment. And then they moved on, like everybody else has to move on.
What?
I mean, come on. In every comic book, the next issue, the Metropolis is fine. Yeah. Yes. And everybody's going around their daily duties. It's a comic book movie. It's not,
listen,
you know.
Comic book movies, and this is going back to what Oral said, you save people.
You save people.
No, and I don't believe, I didn't want to cut you off earlier, but I don't believe that you said, like, yo, don't forget the people. Forget the people. No, just stop the aliens. No. Just, well, I mean, that's what they were there for. Thor and Hulk were stopping the aliens, and then they were, like, trying to save people.
But
just like, that's what we superheroes are. You're forgetting. It's not a big action scene.
But
it's
he,
like,
didn't have the Justice League behind him. He had him. It was one man versus a whole army.
If that's like, if you'd put one Hulk up against three Hulks and then told that Hulk to then go save all those other people.
As
on the
doing
Hulk had enough.
Else.
Okay, that's one who made Hulk.
The humans could have caught the message and started saving each other.
Hulk had enough self-control not to kill Abomination.
You know,
he's the Hulk.
What's Obama got to do with it?
No, hush. I will say
Abomination.
This. You know, I grew up Southern Baptist. The whole kit and caboodle. I will say one of my favorite stories, and we talked about this on the last microsode, is, you know, Thor, God of Thunder, and him being his own trinity. And I really like Gore as a villain because he brings up a really good point. What kind of God lets all of these horrific things happen and does nothing to stop it? It's like, you know, people say, you know, my wife died of cancer. I lost my kids in this horrible accident. All of these awful, awful things happen. All of these horrid people exist. Mm-hmm. And you can say what you want about free will. You can say, you know, well, everything happens for a reason. Well, if that's the case, why don't these awful people or all of these wars just cease to exist? Like, what is the point of us living this life if all of this wretchedness is right there? And if someone does something to stop it, are they really at fault? Was it something that, you know, is God really supposed to just let, you know, if it's really just good and evil, are you just supposed to say, well, devil, you know, I got to beat this time, so, you know, I'm just going to cast your way? No, even if you take, like, you know, religion as a, you know, a literal, like, idea, the rapture comes, the good people go. Horrific, horrific thousand-year war. You know, people who know nothing about this got left behind. This is awful. And sometimes you have to say, no, I need to do this. This is how the world works. I don't like it. I may not agree with it. But if I'm going to try to make the world a better place, the hard decisions have to be made. That's what war is.
And I don't think Superman is that warrior. That's my fundamental disconnect.
Okay, and let's bring us back to, okay, so, Eric, what? Thumbs up? Huge thumbs up,
thumbs
right?
Up.
Two thumbs
penis
up.
Penis is up.
Oh, well, yeah, that would be two thumbs up.
My penis is up.
I would give it, I don't know, I think I'd give it like a six or six out of
ten. Of course, you never give anything a ten.
I don't. Yeah. And what about you, Brian?
It's so tough because I've only seen it once, and I intend to see it again, and then maybe when I see it again, I'll enjoy it a bit more. So I'll go with a tentative, let's go 5 out of 10.
Okay, an oral?
I can't give it, I like the movie. Like, that's it.
Okay, that's
like,
cool.
It wasn't great for
that's
me,
cool.
But I like the movie.
Cool, and then?
I didn't get to talk about the stuff that I didn't like.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you gotta jump in.
Yeah. We're vicious.
Right.
Oh.
You go on a religion and politics, it goes forever.
So, I mean, I feel like if the writer had given him an out, then I would have been more upset about him killing, but I don't feel that the writer gave him an out at all, so I feel like that was his only choice.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't bother me as much. None of the destruction bothered me except for the 7-Eleven blowing up. That I was like, wait a second, that's 7-Eleven.
No, not the big gulps. So what did you not like?
Okay, so the some of mine are silly. So that's also one.
That's okay.
But they spoke English the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
No,
the subtitles.
Like, no translator.
Yeah,
or anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing about and I was like,
that always bothers me.
They didn't even give an explanation about it. Yeah. Like. And I was like, okay, well, maybe since they're on Krypton, they're just translating it for us. And later they'll come back. Yeah, but then, even when they were on the ship with just Kryptonians, they were speaking
English
back and forth.
Perfect,
and I was
neutral what do you call
better
it?
Better than me.
Yeah. Better than Eric, exactly. So what else?
Stage standard is what theater kids Thank call you. It. But so there was that. Paul Kent, why didn't you just make it to where like you can't reveal that you're. That Clark Kent is Superman, we have to create this identity, which is what he normally does.
He's a blur. He's a blur, or whatever right. the small
why,
little thing is.
Yeah. Why change that? Yeah. But and then the fact that he was 33 and he didn't know that he could fly. Like, I don't care. I do really? Not care who you are.
Every kid tries to do that.
Right. I don't care who you are. Even if you know, like, curiosity. 15, like, let's say his dad died when he was 18 years old, and, like, then he disappeared for 15 years, and you're telling me not once, after saving all those people, after jumping off that boat and running and, like, catching the oil rig,
yeah.
he never tried to fly once? He never tried to see...
How did he get to the oil rig?
He swam really boat. Fast.
Okay.
It's yeah. like a 33-year-old not knowing they can masturbate.
Right, I mean, like,
sure it happens, but it is not common.
I don't, like, there's no way, and, like, some people have said, oh, well, he was trying to respect his father's wishes since his father died, and I was like, all right, I'll buy five. I was like, I'll buy 5 years off of that.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah.
like, why didn't they make Henry Cavill 25? And then it would have been more believable, the fact that he hadn't tried all this stuff yet. Yeah, because I can believe that, you know, he went 5 or 7 years... You know, we're trying to keep it all in to respect his father's wishes, but 15 years?
Well, you and I, Taylor, when we were talking, like, Christopher Reeve, when he was Superman, he said, I'm over 21.
Right.
And that's how he left it, where it was fine. However old we wanted him to be, he was.
I really missed this 33 years thing. Totally missed that.
And so did I. Wow. Until Taylor brought it up, I was like, really? 33?
Yeah. And, like, the thing is, Henry Cavill is young. He's 30. Well, I think he's about to turn 31. They made him older than he is in real life, and I'm like, why? Like, most of the time, Hollywood goes younger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, he could have easily passed his 25.
Yeah.
Why not do it? Like, why not make him 25? And I thought that would have made way more sense.
Mm.
Fundamental human or even non-human, like, there's just no way I could buy that he went 15 years. I literally had to just ignore that part of the movie because it doesn't make sense in my head.
So what would you then say you would give this movie out of 10?
One more thing.
Okay. Girl, you are just full of ideas.
There's more.
The beard, we didn't see him shave, and I really wanted
him. Oh, God.
Taylor,
you're awesome.
So many people wanted him to shave. Yeah. Like, they were like, I can't tell you how many people came up and were like, oh, yeah, how did Superman shave? You know, he's Kryptonian. He can't use a razor. And every time I was like, you're an idiot. He shaves in almost every other, like, trade there is, like, using a little mirror with laser his heat vision.
Did you see the Gillette?
Yeah, I saw the Gillette commercial.
They had, like, Bill Nye come in, and they had the Mythbusters come in. They had, like, some other chick come in and say how he would shave. And Bill Nye said that they'd do the grinding method, where he can take something that, you know, he has super strength hair, but he could get something that's less durable than his hair and just grind it away.
Okay.
And then the Mythbusters said he could either pull out every hair really fast, you know,
that makes sense.
One at a time. That'd be painful.
Yeah.
Pull the stubble. Ow.
Superman, I'll just have a beard. That's all there is to it.
And then I think the last person said he could just go into like a salon, like a tanning salon, with red, you know, rays. And then you're done.
And it was fantastic that, you know, you saw Superman, he had chest hair.
Yeah.
He's on fire.
Pat mentioned that, and I didn't even see that. And I'm
that
like, oh my God.
Hot.
It was popping.
That was kind
of
hot.
So, out of 10, what do you think?
I mean, I would honestly, I'd give it like an 8, 8.5.
All right.
Awesome. I loved it.
Fair enough. Well,
that was a lot of fun. Even though everything else can go in the garbage at this point, because we just bitched for like an hour.
Every Man of Steel discussion I've had or been a part of or seen or whatever, there's contention there. A lot of people have very polarized. It's a polarized movie, which is a good thing. I'd rather have a movie where people talk about stuff than a movie where it's like, yeah, it was okay.
Yep.
It's good.
Agreed. Right. Do you guys ever, I don't know if you guys ever want to bring up Dark Knight Rises again.
Oh, God,
I've talked for that for an hour and a half.
No. So. We'll have to do that when the Batman 75th anniversary or whatever.
Yeah. My husband guest star that one. Anyway. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it. I wanted to do this for a while, and this was awesome. So with that.
Whoa there, Eric. Don't forget about our interview with Glenn Weldon, the author of Superman, the Unauthorized Biography. Glenn is a gay geek and sat down with us just a few days ago to talk all about his book, growing up as a gay geek, and all kinds of fun stuff. Now, Oral and I sat down and chatted with him for 45 minutes, but you're just going to get a little bit of it here at the end of this episode. Stay tuned. We'll be posting the full interview up very shortly on our Facebook page. We are here with Glenn Weldon, the NPR media critic, the author of Superman, the Unauthorized Biography. Of course, this is the book that has gotten me so excited about Superman again. From your extensive research and from your book, how would you sum up to some strange person who doesn't know about Superman, how would you describe them?
Well, I mean, what I wanted to do with the book was kind of figure out a way to talk about him that hadn't been done before, because there's a hell of a lot of books out there about this character. And, you know, there's books that examine him from, like, the Jewish cultural perspective. There's books that take any kind of different tacks on him. And what I started to try to do is to try to create a history, which, and I wanted to demonstrate, you know, how pervasive he is in the culture, and document every song that mentioned him and every sitcom that made a reference to him. And that became deadly very quickly, because that's a Wikipedia entry. That's not what I want to do. That's, you know, ultimately I'm not a historian. I'm a critic. I'm a book critic at heart. And so what that means is I know story. I can tell you whether or not a story is working, and I can try to figure out why it may or may not be. And so that was the thing I wanted to do. I wanted to kind of find the through line for this character. It's been 75 years. He is a corporate-owned hunk of property, intellectual property, but he does have a story. Some things about him have stayed exactly the same, and some things have changed. So what I wanted to do was try to figure out what's changed and what does that mean? What does that say about the culture? What does that say about him? And what is the stuff that, and why has the stuff that stayed the same, why has it? So that's really it. And what I came away with is just realizing that the only thing that stays exactly the same over the course of 75 years is his motivation, what he does and why he does it. He puts the needs of others over himself, and he never gives up. If you take either one of those two things out of the mix, it's not a Superman story, because that's who he is. Everything else, the spit curl, the costume, the boots, the pants. Yes, that's right. Everything else comes and goes. It cycles through. But that stays the same because it has to.
As someone who's loved comic books all of their lives, we tend to accrue a lot of data. And so sometimes we're not really surprised by, oh, yeah, I knew that like umpteen years ago. But what really surprised you?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, there's the character of Superman, and there's the idea of Superman. And the character of Superman is something that nerds like you and I, we kind of internalize. That's the one with all those little factoids surrounding it. The idea of Superman is bigger, purer. It's the thing that people who are non-nerds get about Superman. But in terms of all the stuff that's happened to him over the years, and how many times he's been rebooted and revamped and everything like that, I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day. It's been truth, justice, in the American way for as long as I can remember, but actually that came in World War II, the whole notion of the American way. And then the minute World War II was over, that went away. And it became he became a defender of equal rights and racial tolerance. And the American way kind of went out of, kind of got out of the mix for a while. Came back in the 50s when it was the Cold War and the television show, and that's why it seems like it's so closely associated with him. But it just, you know, comes and goes. That's the thing that kind of struck me.
And I was fascinated with that. I think I read that in one of your articles, because a friend of mine at work, who I know is a little more conservative, was appalled about, what was it, 2 years ago, when David Goyer, I think, wrote a story for one of the annuals where Superman renounced his American citizenship.
Oh, yeah.
And was like, no, I'm a citizen of the world. And not that the citizen of the world part is that's fairly new, or, you know, more of a, I guess, a modern take, but that he wasn't just pro-American was not originally a core part of his character, and has, like you said, waxed and waned over the years. Now, given that trend of influence going back to the comics and sort of these certain generational things coming along and changing the perception of Superman, I kind of feel like, having just seen The Man of Steel, we're at another juncture where that, combined with like the New 52, is really going to shape Superman for the kids growing up today. And I gotta say, I'm a little worried with the way that's headed, just from what I've read and then what we saw in the movie.
You know, I was thinking about that because, like, Superman, in my eyes and for most of the world, is like the genesis of the superhero. Like, he's always been the gold standard. My question, Glenn, sometimes I ramble, but I'm getting there. I swear I'm getting there. How do you see this new direction that Superman's taking, like, influencing not only, like, the rest of the New 52, but, like, superhero stories in general?
Okay. Well, I'm not crazy about some of the stuff that's going on in the New 52. I did like Morrison's run on Action Comics. I liked this idea, taking him back to basics and saying he's still the defender of little guy. He's just starting out. I thought that was an interesting take. Didn't understand what the hell they were doing in the Superman comic. Didn't quite understand what was going on there. It seemed kind of like a mess. But what's interesting is this goes back to what I was saying before. There's the character of Superman and the idea of Superman. And the comic's ability to influence that kind of grand overarching idea that everybody on the planet has of who Superman is, they've kind of seeded that ground to the movies. Movies are the ones that really shape that nowadays because so few people like you and me, are still reading the comics. So they don't have the same power they used to. It's the movies that really shape things. And for the first time, you know, I don't want to spoil the end of Man of Steel, but he makes a decision, that the idea of Superman, you know, that your Aunt Faye is familiar with, never made before. He stood for not killing. He stood for that. And now that's changed. So, and also just let's talk a little bit about the tone of the film, which is trying, you know, it's grim, it's, gritty. They're gritting him up so they can kind of fit him into the Batman universe a little bit so they can make sequels and have these two characters coexist. You know, that's changing the cultural consciousness of who this character is. In the comics, people, you know, writers pick up this character, play with him a little bit, and then put him back in the toy box. And I have been disappointed by things that writers and artists have done on Superman, and I will continue to be because that's just the nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
But this character doesn't go away, right? This character, he is a heavily licensed nugget of intellectual property, which means everybody gets a shot at him, but he doesn't change. He kind of keeps, he can't change without getting sign off from like the marketing department and 17 other departments all throughout Warner's and DC. So there's a sameness to that, which is on one hand, it's, you know, it's comforting, but on the other hand, it means that, you know, a large part of what makes a story is an ending. And without an ending, you just have a soap opera. Just constantly iterating, constantly repeating and repeating and repeating. And as long as kids kind of come in and go out, as long as the audience kind of flows through, that's fine. But what's happened now is that people like me keep reading years and years, decade after decade. So we start to see this sameness. And that's why you're starting to get, well, you're not starting to get, it's been happening for a long time, all these reboots and revamps and, oh no, do over. We're hitting the reset button, because there's just so little left for them to do. But again, that's part of the deal. I'm fine with that when it comes to the character, because again, he'll be put back in the toy box. Somebody else will come along and do something with it. The idea, however, what we're talking about before with the cultural consciousness, this movie is going to change how kids especially see this character. And I don't think it's going to change it for the best. But let's wait and see.
You wrote an article about the movie, and you know, you're saying this, but it did have a return to that science fiction heritage that is throughout, you know, the last 75 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is something that the movies haven't really, or the television shows, or any kind of dramatic example of a Superman property that they haven't really spent much time on. They always focus on the humane, on Metropolis, on, you know, crooked land deals of Luther or whatever. They always focus it in really close because to do the kind of crazy, batshit crazy, banana pants stuff they were doing in the Silver Age, you'd need an unlimited budget, like the kind you have when you're drawing a Silver Age splash panel or something.
Lois and Clark seemed to do okay. I'm sorry, that was low. That was a low blow.
That's true. But man, yeah, Clark, let's talk about Cavill. You guys probably already talked about this on the other podcast, but man, he filled the suit. He looked great.
Well, and what was so pleasing to me, I'm the bear of the show,
Oh, are we going to the beard again?
Yes, of course. Well, there's two things. The beard, of course. Can't ignore the beard. The beard inherently makes anything sexier. Well, not anything, but most men sexier. And certainly with that scene or those scenes of him in the out, you know, the rugged northwest or Seattle, wherever he was, like, amazing. And then I didn't even notice this the first time I saw it, but my partner, Pat, pointed out that his costume had, like, neck or, chest hair poking up towards the top, and I was like, I don't think they've ever done that before in at least in the movies, and you know, I'm sure some artist somewhere out there did draw this, but not the norm.
Yeah, I can't remember if John Byrne drew him with chest hair, but certainly seeing that hair poking up out of the neck, and also out of the end of the sleeves, out of the arms too. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that got here in DuPont Circle in the and there was just this rumble that went through the theater. Especially the scene where he kind of steps out, one of the first times where we see him in the costume, he's just walking to the camera, and he just looks drawn. He looks crazy, like that's not a thing that could exist in three dimensions, and yet it does. I also thought it was a really good performance, too. I really thought he brought something like a knowing quality to it, like he was kind of wry, kind of a little bit of a not self-deprecating, but a certain self-awareness, because that is the thing, man. You need to be present in that suit, because you as a person, I'm sure you just feel like a tool. I'm just sure you feel like a jerk. But the acting is convincing us that, no, this is just exactly what I should be wearing. Nope, this is fine. This is a suit. This is Brooks Brothers. I'm just walking around. I'm fine. Don't mind me.
That is
and he really conveyed that. I didn't think the guy playing Zod did. I thought the guy playing Michael Shannon really kind of felt a little ridiculous.
A little unhinged.
Yeah. I think the film had a lot of really good things going for it. I thought, the imagery, you talked about the power this character has. I mean, like, seeing that scene with the kid with the towel, clipped to his back.
Oh.
And doing the thing with the hands, putting the hands on the hips. I mean, that's the image, man. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that nailed it. And there were so many moments like that. I just did think it kind of devolved into a big slugfest that, was evoking 9/11 imagery in a way that really felt sort of sour and gross to me.
Yeah.
And again, I just feel like, we could use a couple smiles more. We could use a joke maybe now and then.
Oh, gosh. There was no fun in the movie.
That's kind of where I was coming down on.
Now, I want to get back to, of course, being that we are a purveyor of some of the themes of, being a gay man or a gay woman, growing up and identifying with sort of geeky culture. I know that for me, Superman always was interesting in a way that, like, male imagery, great, loved it. Depending on who drew it, of course. And of course, I was reading, starting at like the death of Superman and all that. So I was at the worst possible depiction with the god awful,
the mullets.
The mullet. Ugh. But another interesting aspect of Superman's story, certainly, and a lot of superheroes, is the secret identity. And I grew up very religious. I went to a Christian school. Mm-hmm. Had to be somewhat of a sort of secret from who I was to the rest of the world.
Yep.
And I really related to that. And Superman, of course, being one of those formative figures for me, that aspect of his existence really rung a note with me. And then I was actually, another part of your book I was just reading was actually a couple of days ago, but the part where you're describing the very first Superman appearance, I think it was the World's Fair.
Right.
And how he had to be judiciously padded to fulfill the role. It really struck me that in a lot of ways, drag queens are kind of a superhero-like kind of creation in that they have sort of secret identities.
Uh-huh.
And they have this fulfilling their characters with costuming and potentially padding and other interesting things.
I am usually right there with you for segues that sound non sequitur, but wow, that was
what I'm trying to say is, and I've actually talked to at least one drag queen about this, and she was completely on the same page with me. The superheroes are formative, and that was literally something that they as a child went through as, and in this case, a gay man, and seeing these depictions in comics and in popular culture, it really affected them. So, I didn't know if there was any other things maybe, with you growing up and kind of getting into comics that you can think of that were, formative, influencing,
I certainly see your point. I mean, basically, what do drag queens do? They put on a costume to become something bigger than life. iconic, huge, something that's about, in many cases, that's about the body. That's about exaggerating the body in a way that superheroes' musculature is exaggerating. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, these characters are really, in a really basic way, they're about the body. You know, I mentioned this Michael Chabon article in The New Yorker a couple years back where he talks about the superhero costume as drawn is not really a costume. It's basically just colored skin. Because there's no fabric in the world that will be that tight that will allow the musculature to show through in exactly that way. Which is why when you see dudes in spandex, you're like, that's...
disappointing. Always disappointing.
It's not what we're led to expect. You know, it's like, even if they have incredible bodies, there's still something about the fabric that gathers in different ways.
Right.
It's just because, you know, it's obeying the physical laws of the universe, which superhero costumes don't have to do. So, I certainly see some element of that. I mean, you know, as a kid, I had no real clue what was going on. I kind of over-intellectualized everything. And as far as I was concerned, I wasn't gay because, you know, I saw gay people on television and I wasn't like that. So quite like possibly gay. But in the meantime, they were like chaste nudie magazines, you know? They were just like dudes wailing on each other in skin-tight outfits, which were, as we said before, effectively skin. But of course there was no sex. It was just, sexuality in a weird way. So I think we respond to that. I think I responded to that. I think I responded to the black and whiteness of it. I mean, not, it's, you know, full colors, but like there's good. And there's evil, and yet, even as you're fighting for the good and you're doing something right, you are hiding something from the people that you love. I think this is a big part of it. I think this is, we identify with that aspect of these characters because we recognize something in ourselves.
Glenn, I have one last question for you. Now, you and I have similar, like, viewpoints on this new Wonder Woman that we see in Justice League and the Wonder Woman that, for me, is the new 52 Brian Azzarello one.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this new Superman, Wonder Woman, young romance date book that I assume is coming out sometime next series of the new 52?
Yeah, I guess. I haven't read too much about it. The only exposure I've had to it is, you know, the stuff I see in Justice League, which is just not grabbing me. I mean, you know, sure. I mean, let's mix it up the classic triangle. Let's have Lois be a character by herself as opposed to somebody who's defined by her relationship with Superman. I like that idea.
Yeah.
I just, you know, the problem is the characterization of Wonder Woman and Superman, who just come off in that book as ciphers to me. So I'm not really vibing on it, but, you know, I'll check it out, but that's all I know. What do you feel like?
It saddens me because I think that, you know, Geoff Johns, good and bad, can really tell a story, but for some reason, it's just like, I like Superman and Justice League. I do not like Wonder Woman and Justice League because they kind of boil her down to, not anything against Linda Carter. I love Linda Carter, but this kind of like Linda Carter, I can kill and I'm here for sound bites and oh look it's ice cream, and she has none of the depth, and she seems really shallow and superficial. She's a flat character.
Right. I agree.
Well, Glenn, would you like to tell our listeners where they can find you?
Sure. If you get the book, please do. I'm using my Tumblr as sort of a visual companion because there are no photos in the book, no images in the book because, I would have had to pay for them out of my teeny weeny little advance. And, I would have gone to hock for this book. So I'm using, the Tumblr, glennweldon.tumblr.com, as a sort of visual companion, taking a lot of things that just didn't fit in the book or that I can only refer to vaguely in the book and kind of saying, here's what's some stuff that's going on here. I'm getting into some of those crazy 60s and 70s stories, which make me very happy. I'm also on Twitter at GHWeldon, at GHWeldon, and that's a place where I just do a lot of dumb puns and jokes and link to a lot of my stuff. And I write for NPR.org quite a lot. Book reviews, just, either graphic novels, comics, or regular books. I also I write specifically for their Monkey See pop culture blog. I'm also on Pop Culture Happy Hour, which Oral, you mentioned. It's a
brilliant show.
I mean, we have a lot of fun doing it. It's something that we do sort of in the after hours at NPR. I kind of go in there and just sort of kind of do it on the fly. Everybody's doing it in their spare time, so it's sort of, it's not going to sound polished, but it's, and the episode we have coming up this week is really, really kind of loose, I'll say, because it's, it was our third anniversary. We've been doing it for 3 years, and so we didn't really have, you know, a topic. So I have a feeling you guys know what I'm talking about, where you kind of just fly by the seat of your
pants. Never.
Yeah. thank you so much for this interview. It has been a blast and a pleasure.
Flame on!
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, A Comic Shop, Nerdapalooza, and the generous support of tops and bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.